7-Eleven has more drinks than times you've been caught singing in your car and random lyrics stored in your brain combined. Choose from Big Gulp flavors starting at 79 cents, like Fanta Orange, Minute Maid Fruit Punch, Powerade Mountain Berry Blast, Brisk Strawberry Melon Iced Tea, plus many more only at participating 7-Eleven stores. This summer, put on your favorite song and hit the road with a thirst-quenching Big Gulp drink starting at 79 cents today, plus taxes where applicable.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Tan Chung Han, and on the line we have Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank in Singapore.
Good morning, Vishnu. We've got recent reports of North Korea firing yet another missile, so obviously that has stoked geopolitical concerns. Question here is, you know, given this global economic recovery theme that we've been seeing of late, you know, is the recovery strong enough to fend off these geopolitical risks?
Well, with geopolitical risk, it's always difficult to suggest whether it can or cannot fend off. What we can, I think, glean off is that for now, it's not going to derail whatever recovery is underway in any case. The fact is that with geopolitical risks, what happens is that you will have the economy humming along as per normal until we hit a point of precipitation, which can send commodity markets in a bit of a spin either way, and then risk comes off and things like that. So until we reach that point, I think for now, the North Korea risk is just being seen as one of tightening sanctions and perhaps still rather discussion-based. And I think with China and Russia suggesting action should be refrained, it shouldn't precipitate into anything wider. But we watch for this week's G20 meetings to see what happens.
And speaking about those G20 meetings, now we got to talk about the perceived importance of China as a stabilizer of sorts on the global stage, and not just in the economic context, but also geopolitically, because we have this rift between the U.S. and we have an administration in the U.S. that's pulling back from globalization. So how important is China in today's context?
I would probably reframe China as a very heavyweight in a multipolar balancing mechanism. So China is required to balance. China doesn't always come across as a stabilizer, but that's exactly why a lot of the other geopolitical and global players have to position such that the overall dynamics are stable. China is going to be very important in terms of exerting influence without the situation precipitating into aggression insofar as North Korea is concerned. But equally, when we come to things of South China Sea, East China Sea issues, as well as, some hidden banking sector, asset market risks, I think China probably will have to tweak its policies very delicately as well.
Now, through which channel do you think these risks will manifest themselves more clearly? Because we have seen the markets right now seeming to react to those concerns coming out of North Korea. So would it be the financial channel or would it be trade? You know, where would the biggest risk come from?
I think the fastest twitch and the fastest reaction usually comes or is usually derived from the financial market. So you probably see commodity prices reacting very quickly. You'll also find a lot of the so-called safe haven reflex. So you find a lot of reflex to buy things like gold, U.S. treasuries, a sell-off in perceived risky assets. So that's where the shock will come through first. But very quickly, it'll cascade down to trade insofar that it sees a bit of a cessation in global trade. But after that, I think things will normalize a little bit. What it'll do is it'll suppress activities in certain areas. It tends to push up costs on the cost end of things. And that's the usual reaction mechanism that we'll see.
All right, let's switch our attentions to Australia then. Yesterday, the central bank there, the RBA, they kept their interest rates unchanged at that record low of 1.5%. What's your main takeaway from the RBA's decision?
I think the RBA can be just summed up in terms of expectations getting ahead of themselves in the wrong direction. So, I mean, the RBA has I think, remain quite neutral. To be very fair, there was no expectations of the rates being moved either way, whether it's a cut or a hike. But the market sense was that the next move after a prolonged pause will be a hike. And what markets had expected is that they thought that the RBA, like the Bank of Canada, or to some extent like the ECB, will turn slightly more hawkish. The RBA, however, did not. I think they're concerned about softening in the housing market. They're also afraid that this will flow through to the households who may spend less, dragging the economy at a time where commodity prices are already soft. So this so-called dovish surprise caught markets out, despite there being no action at all, and that's why the Aussie dollar collapsed from being near 77 cents to testing below 76 cents.
Nevertheless, those expectations remain, though. So the question here is, when will or can Australia jump on that global tightening bandwagon?
I mean, that's the excellent question. I think what has happened is that we were anticipating it might be later this year. But if oil prices were to remain rather soft, I think that would be the pause would be prolonged a lot further. So we might have this pushed out into 2018 just to be safe, whilst the RBA navigates China risks, soft commodities, and also whilst they get a better pulse of their housing market.
And once again, you know, we got to look at China, though, because, you know, like you mentioned earlier, Australia obviously very much exposed to the risks emanating out of China. So, again, given the domestic fundamentals versus those foreign risks from China, how do you balance out the Australian story there?
Well, I think where Australia is concerned, they are fairly comfortable with lower commodity prices so long as they're not falling horrendously. So I think they are getting accustomed to that. They want the Australian dollar to be fairly soft as well, so that the economy can adjust and rebalance to more manufacturing. What they are afraid of is that if there's any banking or housing sector risks in China, then you get a free fall in commodity prices. So that's how they're looking at it. For now, I think the immediate pulse that the RBA wants, one is from the labour market. They want to ensure that the job creation is maintained. They've seen some positive numbers recently, but that comes from the back of softer numbers earlier. So they want to see some stabilisation there. And they also want to ensure that the housing market begins to stabilise rather than drop, because they are afraid that will impact the ability of more highly leveraged households to spend. So they are aware that households have a bigger debt burden, and that's why they are watching the housing market risks a bit more closely.
Now, speaking about job creation, that's going to be a key economic indicator coming out of the U.S. later this week. We've got June's non-farm payrolls due out on Friday at 8:30 p.m. Malaysian time. I'm looking at the Bloomberg Surveys median estimate, 177,000 jobs added, which would be higher, if true, would be higher than the 138,000 that were added in the month prior. What's your outlook for that economic print?
Well, we are expecting it to pick up. I mean, we have seen a lot of the details of other surveys. For example, the ISM manufacturing survey that just came out, they have a sub-index for the employment index that picked up. That suggests that job creation picked up a little further. But the big takeaway is this. The big takeaway is that unemployment levels are already very low. So what the Federal Reserve is watching out for is really the ability of a tighter labour market now to create a pickup in wages. So they're watching wages more closely. The jobs number itself has got a wide berth. A better number will just be taken as an offset for weaker numbers in May. A softer number would be within the Federal Reserve's appetite to look through interim weakness. So they want to see wage inflation. And I think that's what a lot of other central banks are looking at, the ability to create jobs and then translate it into higher wages.
So what do you think is missing there then? Because like you rightly pointed out, you know, despite unemployment levels being already low, and not just in the States, but also in the European context as well, but it is not necessarily being translated into a push factors for inflation, right? Wages growth and also for headline inflation. So what do you think is the disconnect there?
Well, I mean, that's a very good question, and I think that's one that a lot of central bankers are grappling with, not necessarily getting all the answers right, but there are a few clues that we have. One is what you call labour market friction. As the economy has gone through a lot of changes over the last few years, you get people falling out of the job market and not wanting to re-enter because of their disillusion or something like that, and that brings down the unemployment number, but it's misguided. The other thing is the ability to translate or to switch from industry to industry. So that is not picking up. And the last factor is there are some segments of job market or job creation. It's not cascading throughout the economy. And because there isn't enough demand created on a broad-based basis, that's not creating enough wage inflation, because there isn't enough so-called churn. usually in the labor market, if you see a lot of churning that creates wage inflation, too much is not a good thing. But I think economists are discovering that too little churn, too little movement also causes a stagnation, becomes like a stagnant pool rather than a flowing river. So that may be one thought behind it.
All right, so we'll certainly be keeping a close eye on this Friday's data and hopefully another touch point for the Fed to consider in their broader agenda to tighten U.S. monetary policy. Hey, Vishnu, always a pleasure speaking to you. That was Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy with Mizuho Bank in Singapore.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.